we continue to talk about the Antichrist or this lying spirit, the things that happen in all of our lives, that if you really look back and be honest, every lie that you believed caused difficulty in your life somewhere along the line, and every truth that you believed had an opposite effect, a positive effect. Now, Jesus is going to answer to us why we attract liars. You know, liar, liar, pants on fire. You remember that one? We got hot pants in this place because we got lots of liars, pants on fire, you know. And I'm going to tell you why you lie so much. And I'm going to tell you why people lie to you. You see, I gave up a long time ago trying to figure out who's going to lie and who isn't and whose pants are on fire and whose aren't. You see, that's just too tough for me. My brain can't handle that much thinking. So I finally realized that when Jesus said, what you do to people is what they're going to do to you, I finally realized all I had to do is tell people the truth, and they had to tell me the truth or shut up, one of the two. So as a result, some of my social activities took a little downturn. You know, not as many people talk to me anymore as used to, but those of you that do, tell me the truth. Even though you think you're lying to me. See, some of you try to lie to me, but even in not telling me the truth, you're telling me the truth. And I've told you how you do this before. You'll call me and you'll say, boy, my husband, he's so mean-tempered and he's so quick to anger. And the Bible says, whatever you're guilty of, that's what you'll accuse everybody else of. So even while you're lying to me, you're telling me the truth without even realizing it. And I know you better than you do. Which by all intents and purposes, that'd have made me insane by now, but it hasn't. Somebody has to know you because you don't. Now let's find out how to recognize when the lie's coming into your life and what effect it has on you. Verse 4 of chapter 24 says, and Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. See, everything that's wrong in your life started with somebody lying to you. Somebody telling you something that wasn't true, which is half the problem. See, half the problem is when somebody tells you something that isn't true. The other half is that you believe it. See, now you could protect yourself from all liars if you just didn't believe the lie. The problem is you can't tell a lie from the truth because you lie so much yourself. See, so unless you have a dartboard, you say, well, I wonder what that is. I wonder what that is. Well, see, Jesus says, be careful that no man deceive you. He didn't say, be careful that no man lie to you. See, people lie to me all the time. I mean, none of you can deceive me. Because Jesus said, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Now I know that you don't walk around saying, I'm Jesus Christ, and I'm God, and I'm this, but yes, you do. Because when you make a decision and you know something is wrong, and you decide to do it anyway, you become the God of your life. See, your conscience has taught you what's right and wrong. Before you light it up or sniff it or snort it or ram it or jam it or cram it or whatever you do with it, you know that it's wrong. But the minute you decide to do it anyway, you supersede the right of your conscience, what you know is right, and someone of greater authority takes over in your life and says, we're going to do it anyway. So you see, he says, watch it when you come to yourself and say, I'm going to quit tomorrow. Or we're going to change later on. He says, that man is deceiving you and saying he is Christ. Now, here's the end result of when you believe the lie. Verse 11, and many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. Now, the minute you got your life full of liars, and full of lies, which primarily comes from you, here's what happens. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Now, I know you've always looked at that in religious terms, but let's put it into your family. Did you ever stop to wonder why there are times when you actually hate your kids? I know you love them, but there are times that you can't stand their guts. I've heard somebody say, I'm going to kill you. Do you know that's a threat that can be taken to a court of law? You could be sued for that. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that during that time, the love for your child has waxed cold. Isn't it amazing that the people you look back in your life, the people that you loved at one time, something happened and you don't hate them, but you don't love them anymore. There's just something in between, like a nothing thing, like you're sorry that it isn't there anymore, but then you don't really care that it isn't, and it doesn't matter that it isn't, and it doesn't matter that it does, and you just like, you don't care. You see, it used to be so much easier before we were Christians. We'd get mad and slap each other and cuss each other out, and you either hated them or you loved them. But we can't do that anymore. Now love only waxes cold when iniquity abounds in your life. And you see what it can do. It can make you make all kinds of stupid decisions in terms of you thinking you're in the wrong job, in the wrong marriage, in the wrong relationship, in the wrong situation, because you just don't like that job anymore. You used to love it. Now you hate to get up and go do that work. The thought of going there just leaves you cold. Yet, you tried very hard and you interviewed and you went and lied your way into that job and told them what a wonderful employee you were going to make. Even wore your best suit. The one with the asbestos BVDs, liar, liar, pants on fire, because you lied. But you see, now this love has waxed cold. Now we mistakenly think then the answer is to find a new job, find a new relationship, find a new something. But you see, even though the people that we introduce into our lives may be new, the jobs may be new, it's still the same old you. So as a result, we have the same result again, and you mistakenly think you got to change again. And in a way, you're right, but see, you're changing everything external of you instead of changing the internal things. Now, what is it? What is this love that you've lost? And it isn't that it's gone. It's just cold now, because it's not become hate, but it isn't love. And I think where it attacks people the most is when you sit down and think about your life and think about you, or get up in the morning and start shaving or combing your hair, ladies, and you look in the mirror and be honest now. You can't stand you. You look at yourself and you say, I'm ugly. I'm fat, I'm skinny, I'm stupid, I'm this, I'm that. And in a manner of speaking, there's a lot of truth in that, but that's not the issue that we're trying to deal with here. Somehow or other, your love for you has waxed cold. Now, I'm asking you something. Be very considered. Man, if you don't love you and you don't take care of you, who the hell's going to do it? Well, the first thing you'll start looking is for mama. You'll start looking for someone to mother you, someone to take you as ugly and as bad as you are, because if you think back in your life, the only one that took you under those conditions was mama. As a matter of fact, she made you that way so nobody else would love you, so she would be the only one. See, that's a diabolical thing that happens. She cuts you to shreds so that you don't have a shred left of self-confidence or self-esteem. So and then on the same hand tells you, but I love you. You're stupid and you're this, but I love you. Nobody else is going to love you this way. Who would love you, stupid? Now, what have they done? What have they built in? First of all, they've cut you to shreds and made you believe that's your reality, but more importantly, no one else will love you but her. So now as a result, you are addicted. You're locked into that for the rest of your life until a man comes along and frees you from that. And the minute that man comes along and attempts to free you from that, who does the mother-in-law hate the most? Your fiancé. Because you see, now there's a tugging, now there's a struggle for superiority in the life of the woman. So it is natural now that she cannot serve two masters. she can't be her daughter and his wife because she's either a woman or she's a child. With men, it's the same way. You get caught up in the same thing, and then you require that your wife mother you instead of wife you. For the simple reason that you were told the same thing, and you really feel that you're inadequate. And what happens with men primarily in that kind of a situation, having dealt with that kind of low self-esteem all of their lives, as soon as they find something that will make them feel better about themselves, even though it's temporary, you're gone. Drugs and alcohol will do that. It'll make you temporarily feel like you're really worth something. When the reality is, as soon as it starts wearing out, you get worse depression than you had to begin with. So very quickly we find that that's not the answer. But not knowing that there is an answer, we opt to take that halfway relief, even though we get the depression and the crashing and the overdose later on. See, we get locked into this thing. And I'm not here to tell you that we ought to line up every mother in the world and shoot them. That's not the case. All I'm saying is what was wrong with your mammy is that your dad didn't have the training and the gumption and the knowledge to take that woman and love her and take care of her and lead her so that she could see that her need was being met and she wouldn't have to try to do it herself. That's the only thing wrong with your mom. Your dad wasn't your dad. He was her son. So you see, I'm not trying to criticize that because we can't do anything about that. That's history. What I'm asking you to do, let's stop the cycle with you. Let's not pass it on to our children who will pass it on to their children, and then who's going to stop it? It'll never stop that way. You see, you have to understand that the minute love starts waxing cold, all kinds of bad things start happening in your life. I've never counseled or met an individual yet who had one problem in their lives that had a good, strong sense of loving and being loved. Never once have I met an individual that way. Now, I've met a lot of people who had a very strong sense of lusting and being lusted, but that's a big difference between loving and being loved. And knowing that you don't know what love is, I decided to tell you this evening. The word love from the Greek is agape. And it means basically two things, to love in a social sense and then to love in a moral sense. Now, men, if you will learn to love your wives in a social sense and a moral sense, the physical love will take care of itself. Ladies, if you will learn to accept the social love and the moral love of your husband, the physical love will take care of itself. But if you're honest, every one of us started our relationships just the other way. We were physically attracted first. We made some physical decisions. We made some sexual decisions first. And then having started backwards, we try to start going back to morality and sociability. And it doesn't work that way. So what I'm trying to tell you this evening, if you want to make sense of your life and you don't want this love that you have now to wax cold like every other love that you've had has waxed cold, then you better listen. You better listen how love works. You first must love in a social sense, then a moral sense, and then the physical takes care of itself. Now let me tell you, men, how to be a lover. Ladies, I'm going to tell you how to recognize a lover. Social love, or social, means to follow a man who's a warrior and a companion. That's what the word social means. Look it up in your dictionary. See, we live in America, and we speak what we think is English, having no idea what the word meant. I'd give you a dollar to a donut. There's no one in this room, with the exception of myself, that knew that social meant following a man who's a warrior and a companion. You see, that's where social begins. We can't be cavemen. It's not everybody for themselves. See, whenever you get social, it means people start interacting together. Now, watch your children. The minute one kid and another kid get together, immediately a leader is picked. Immediately. And it doesn't matter if there's 10, 15, 20 kids, they all choose a leader. They follow one person. Ultimately, they'll follow one person. You get a herd of bison out in the field and they'll butt heads until somebody finally emerges as the leader. Lions will slash and crash and gouge and snort and snarl until finally someone comes out a leader. It's in our nature to follow. It's built into our nature. The problem is not that you're following. That's built in. It's what you're following that's the problem. You're not following a man who's a warrior and a companion. You're following a male, ladies. And in order to be a male, all you have to do is have the proper equipment, and we didn't do a thing to get that. We were born with it. That don't make you a man. It makes you a male. That's it. See, to be a man, you must be a warrior and a companion, and that doesn't mean fight with your wife. See, the fighting is supposed to be against those that would attack her. See, ladies, don't pick someone that's going to fight with you. You got it backwards. He also needs to be a companion, and remember what companion meant? Came from two words, com, which means with, and panis, or pan, which is the Latin word, which means bread. In other words, the companion is the one you eat with, the one you socialize with, the one you eat and share meals with. That's your companion. But you see, he also needs to be a warrior and a man, not just someone that comes and plops himself in front of the TV set and says, "What's for dinner?" Mm-mm, that's not a companion. Social also means having to do with human beings living together as a group in a situation in which their dealings with one another affect their common welfare. Here's the way a man loves. He does nothing in his family that doesn't have as much benefit for him as for his wife and for his children. Anything that benefits him only, or benefits wife only, or benefits kids only, is not agape love. Understand that right now. It'll take all the selfishness out of every relationship that you have. And if you have no selfishness in that relationship, I'm guaranteeing you, based on the Word of God, that love will never wax cold. You will go to your old age loving one another, caring for one another, and you'll never have another lonely day, another lonely night in your entire life. But you got to understand, it starts by living in a situation where the dealings affect the common welfare. No selfishness. No intimidation of the wife to do something that you want done, whether it's good for her or not. Ladies, that means every headache and every excuse you've had in the past is out the window. And let me tell you something else. If your intimate relationship with your husband isn't having a common welfare and a common good, there's a perversion in there. There's a perversion. There's too many people involved. And the people that are involved, is somehow or other, he's trying to relate to you as he related to his mother, so that puts his mother in the relationship. She's trying to relate to you in such a way she related to her father because you're a male. There's too many people in bed. Now, I know there's only two of you physically there, but in your mind, there's all these people, and you're trying to relate to your husband as you related to your father. You see him as you saw your father, either too strong, too weak, or whatever he was. And wives, you see yourselves as the way your mother dealt with your husband, and you, there's too many people there. See, this is an intimate relationship. There ought to be only two there. It works much better that way. For a lot of reasons. Social also means to offer material aid, counseling services, and group recreational activities to those who need it. Now, isn't that a good description of a happy family? Offering material aid giving your wife money before she grovels at your feet, begging for it, offering material aid, counseling service, being willing to talk to her, being willing to listen to her, and group recreational activities. That might mean going somewhere and doing something you really don't want to do, but it's for their benefit, and they'll enjoy it, and eventually you will too. So you see, it begins with social. And then we have to add the ingredient of moral love. Men, this is probably the thing that ruins more relationships. It's the unwillingness and or the inability of the male, the man involved, to love his wife and his children in a moral sense. Moral means to be capable of making the distinction between right and wrong in conduct. Now let me tell you what I mean. You tell your children, don't do that, and don't you dare eat that, that's bad for you. And then you turn around and you light one up and do something that's just as damaging or more damaging for you than what the child is doing. You're not making a distinction between right and wrong in conduct. You are confusing that child. You tell your wife, don't talk to me that way, woman. Don't raise your voice at me. You ought to be more considerate of me. And you're right. But then when it's time for you to interact with her, you raise your voice if you damn well feel like it. So you see, there's no morality there. You're not making the distinction between right and wrong in conduct. You have a little of both. You expect her, see, and you say, well, the best thing is to have right and wrong. I want her to act right and I'll act wrong. Well, then she jumps that bandwagon and says, well, I'll do that too. Now I want to act wrong and you act right. And then the kids say, well, we like this too. We'll act wrong and you act right. So as a result, everybody's love in the family waxes cold. And let me tell you something. The highest incidence of child abuse and child neglect is what I've just outlined to you. The times and the incidence of people abusing their children physically and sexually is an outgrowth, a manifestation of this kind of abuse. That abuse doesn't happen without this abuse first. Of all the people that I've talked to in my ministry, and I've been blessed, I have never met a person yet that either abused or was abused who lived in a home where there was agape love, social and moral love. But everyone that I've counseled, it's when dad had a rule for his conduct and had a rule for yours, and they weren't the same. He dealt with his wife differently than he dealt with his female children. He dealt with himself differently than he dealt with you as his son. There was no morality. See, morality doesn't have a whole lot to do with doing right or wrong in terms of drinking and cussing and fighting, robbing and stealing. Those are the manifestations. The real meaning of the word moral is not to be able to make the distinction between right and wrong. Now, all of those times that you do those kinds of things, you always apologize afterwards. And you always promise you'll never do it again, so obviously you know it's wrong. But at the time that it comes, you do it again. So at the time of action, you're unable to make the distinction between right and wrong. Why would you say afterwards, what did I do that for? Or, I'm sorry, hon. God, I don't mean that. I'll never do that again. You know you're lying, because that's the umpteenth time you've apologized. Now, rather than cut yourself down to the quick because you're a liar and you don't know why, let me tell you why. You're not able to make the distinction between right and wrong at the time. You do afterwards. I've never sat with anybody afterwards. No one's ever told me, it's right to drink. It's right to do drugs. It's right to beat my wife. It is right to be disrespectful to my husband. I've never talked to one person that ever made those kinds of statements. But every one of them, at the time that they're talking with their husband, is disrespectful. At the time they drink, at the time they take the drugs, at the time they do that that's wrong, and then afterwards we talk about it and they say, oh, I know that's wrong. So you see, they don't have the capability of making the distinction between right and wrong when it matters, when you're making the decision, when you're taking the action. Afterwards doesn't help. All it's going to do is convict you and prove to you that you don't have a problem knowing the difference between right and wrong afterwards. It's at the time that you make the wrong decision. Why? You don't have any moral love. You're not able to make the distinction between right and wrong in conduct. Why? Because you have two codes of conduct. One for you and one for everybody else. So you see, you can't make the distinction. My friend, right is right and wrong is wrong. Doesn't matter who's doing it. Moral also means to teach in accordance with the principles of right and wrong. So you see, it isn't only doing right, but it's also to teach in the same principles. And let me tell you how you teach. The minute your wife sees you doing something different than what you told her was right, you're teaching her iniquity. You're building her up, and one day her love for you is going to wax cold, and you're going to regret it. You're going to come and ask me what's wrong, and I'm going to remind you of this night when I told you, having double standards, having no sense of morality, having two ways of doing things, making concessions for your children but criticizing the neighbor's kids. Listen, if the neighbor's kids disturb you when they're hollering and screaming, how come yours don't? No morality. Because take my word for it, a kid screaming sounds just as obnoxious, it doesn't matter which one it is. You see, there's no moral input. You've never been taught to make that distinction. So as a result, you were raised as a child with this conflict that what you see, what you do is the wrong, and what you talk about, what you believe is the right. Isn't that what they taught you? Your parents said, son, I don't want you to drink. If I catch you with a beer, you're going to get it. But he got drunk all the time. And if he caught you with a cigarette before you were 18, he'd beat the hell out of you. But he smoked them. He had them in his ears even. I mean, there were cigarettes everywhere. So you see, what is that man teaching me? Well, he's teaching me that you believe right and do wrong. Because he's my mentor. He's my idol. He's my image. He's my father. And the Bible says I have to honor my father. So now what am I growing up now? What kind of conflict do I have going on? Well, I have to honor him. I have to believe what's right, and I do, but I also have to do what's wrong. And then you come back and find out that in life, that kind of goings on doesn't work. You go to work, and the boss says, do it this way. And you say, oh, yeah, that's right. And then you do it just the opposite. Isn't it amazing that even in your relationship with your wife or your husband, the minute he says, this is the way that I'd like it done, you have a burning desire to do it a little bit different. Different than what was said. Why? Because that's what you were taught as a child. See, it was imprinted in your mind that the code of behavior had to be thus. You believed one thing and did something else. Now, how in the world are you ever going to get out of that? That's imprinted in you. I mean, you're programmed that way. What do you have to understand, like we're teaching tonight, why you do what you do? And being angry at one another and threatening one another doesn't change the programming. The fear of God won't even do it. I could preach hellfire and brimstone all I want. I could threaten you with lightning bolts, and that wouldn't do it either. For the simple reason that it's not a conscious decision you're making, it's a subconscious decision you're making. You were programmed that way. Think right, do wrong. Think different than what you do. Think different than what you do. Isn't it amazing that it works both ways? You think right and do wrong. Now you go to church and you try to think wrong in order for you to feel so guilty. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm no damn good. That's all there is to it. I'm lousy. Nobody loves me. God doesn't love me. You think wrong, and then you do just the opposite. Isn't that amazing? It's still conflict. See, no one, you're never going to do it by someone beating you on the head and telling you how wrong you are. Although that works for a while, because if you start thinking wrong, you'll start doing right. But the problem is you still have the same conflict. Now, when you have that conflict, you start out with a threat, and you think wrong about yourself, and you start doing right. But it waxes cold after a while, doesn't it? Or you could start the other way. You could start thinking wrong or thinking right and doing wrong and enjoying the hell of it. I don't give a damn. I'm going to drink. I'm going to cuss. I'm going to do whatever I want. I know it's wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. Well, you start out that way, thinking one way and doing the other, but after a while, it waxes cold. After a while, you wish to God you weren't addicted. You wish to God you didn't need the drink. You wish to God you didn't have that temper. You wish to God you didn't have all that blubber on you. See, because it's waxed cold now, hasn't it? So you see, the only way this is going to work is what you think, what you believe, and what you do have to be consistent. Now, how many times have I told you, I have more respect for a person who'll sit down and say, Reuben, I don't give a damn what you say. I think that's right, and I'm going to do it. Now, at least I have this person all together. See, he's not going to confess and say, well, yes, I know you're right, and I believe, and I love the Lord, and I love right, and then he goes out and does just the opposite. At least we're honest at that point. I can deal with that kind of individual much easier. And the reason that I learned that is that the kind of individual that I had to become, because I had to deal with me first. I had to finally confess, I love doing this. I'm a jerk. I love this. And I finally stopped saying, oh, I'm sorry. Hell no, I like doing this. And then finally, when the immorality became so complete, then I could deal with it because there was no conflict then. But if you don't believe me, what's going to happen is the love waxes cold. And wax cold means to become cool, to have a coolness. It means to chill the relationship. Now, let me tell you what happens when your love starts waxing cold. Man, I'm going to warn you now. Long before your wife's love for you waxes cold, her love for herself will wax cold. Men, long before your love for your wife waxes cold, your love for you will wax cold. Long before your love for your job or your career or your life waxes cold, your love for you will wax cold. It'll chill. Waxing cold means to have a damper put on your enthusiasm. You just get to the point where it doesn't matter anymore. What's it all about, Alfie? It just doesn't seem to, life doesn't seem to make any sense. It doesn't matter what you have, you just have such a hard time being enthusiastic about it. It's hard to get up in the morning. It's hard to go to bed at night. It's hard to sleep. It's hard to stay awake. It's hard. It just, you lose your enthusiasm. See, those are warning signs that there's iniquity in your mind. There's a lack of social and moral love going on. You have a damper on your enthusiasm. Now, what happens when that attacks you, your partner personalizes that and thinks that somehow you're reacting to him or her, and they compound the problem by adding their pressure, by them thinking it's me that you don't love, when in reality, their enthusiasm for life is being dampened. You see, if you're blessed with a husband that knows how this works, then you can have these kinds of manifestations of behavior. He'll understand it, and he'll be your friend, your warrior, and your companion. He'll be that soothing comfort that you need while you get through this thing and win the battle. But you see, if he takes it personal, and now he's saying, well, you're not treating me like mommy did, and his needs for you supersede yours, then what the hell you need him for? Put another diaper on him, put him in the other room, call me up, and we'll deal with this thing. See, this guy's no good to you this way. Doesn't understand you have a damper on your enthusiasm. It's not something you ordered. It's not even something you want. It's something that's inevitable because you don't know that your social and moral love is seriously depleted for the simple reasons you were never taught that way. You don't know what's going on in you. Now, you know where it hurts, but you're no doctor. You don't know what's causing it. But see, the doctor needs you to tell him where it hurts, and you need the doctor to tell you what to do about it. Well, in a spiritual sense, that's what I need. You need to be honest with me and tell me where it hurts. There's people sitting in this room, you've been lying to me for years now. Might as well tell you this right now. I know how Jesus Christ works. I know that in those areas where you haven't been totally healed yet, you're withholding on me. You're holding back something. You're lying. You're giving me half of a problem in which I give you what I think is a complete answer, but it's only half a problem, so in reality, it's only half an answer. And then when it doesn't work, you ask me to come up with another answer, and I know what it is. You're holding out on me. There's some things you've remembered you're not telling. There's some things you've done or are doing you're not saying. There's some conflicts going on that you're not being open and above about them. You're lying. And be careful. He said, take heed that no man deceive you. Now, if you think about it realistically, think of all the people that have lied to you in your life. And then honestly now say to yourself, who, what human being on this planet has lied to you more than all the others? You. I mean, you lie to yourself every day. Nobody lies to you more than you do. So now you see you have your love is waxing cold. You've lost your enthusiasm. Chill or waxing cold also means a discouraging influence. It just seems like everything you do doesn't work. The things you used to enjoy, you don't enjoy anymore. The things you thought you would hate, you don't hate anymore. You just don't hate anything. You don't like anything. You just become like nothing. You can't even hate anything anymore. I mean, that's when it gets... See, not being able to love, that's bad enough. But when you finally get to the point where you can't even hate anything, you have no emotion, no feeling, no force of any kind for anything. Where do you want to go, huh? I don't know. I can remember when you say, well, I don't want to go there. I want to go here. At least you had some life. But now, I don't know. You want to go there? Well, yeah, yes. What do you say? Well, it don't matter. And then we get there and we spend all kinds of money. Did you enjoy yourself? Well, I don't know. I guess. You see, there's no enthusiasm left. The only thing that's left to do is put you in a box and throw dirt in your face. You're dead and don't even know it. You have a discouraging influence on the children, on everyone around you. Chill or waxing cold means a feeling of sudden fear, a feeling of apprehension. That's when you're sitting at home and you just, there's this fear, and you look around and you say, well, God, everything's fine. I've got a nice home. I got a nice apartment. I got a job. I feel right. My health is right. But you have this feelings of fear and apprehension that are inexplicable. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't even know why. Well, what is happening? Your love is waxing cold for the simple reason that you are having iniquity abounds in your life. Chill or waxing cold means to become cool in manner, to become unfriendly, to become depressed. And then that chill leads you to cool. Cool means to be neither warm nor cold. You just don't really care anymore. It doesn't matter if it does. It doesn't matter if it doesn't. Cool also means, or waxing cold means, showing dislike or indifference. Not cordial. Having lost enthusiasm. You've lost interest. You're emotionally uninvolved. Unenthusiastic. Uncommitted and dispassionate. And then the final definition is cold. And notice how the temperature gets, as we go from chill to cool to cold, notice how your mood changes and your behavior changes. This is frightening. If you're at cold already, be careful. If you're at cool, snap to. And if you're just chilled, you got a little time left. Let me tell you what cold means. It means to become depressingly depressed, saddened to the point of unconsciousness. That's the point where you people talk to you and you just don't even hear anymore. And then the last part of the definition of cold is dead. Can you see how the body dies by degrees? Now, are you the kind of person that you're sitting watching TV and the temperature is the same in the whole room? And all of a sudden, your feet are cold. And you've got things on your feet and pillows and what have you, and your feet are freezing. Part of you is getting cold, isn't it? Can't you see that's a telltale sign? You're going to wait until all of you is cold? That's dead, dumb. Don't wait. See, what your body is telling you, we're losing enthusiasm. We're dying by degrees. Circulation starts, hair starts, teeth start falling out. Things start, you ain't done with, you start losing them. Things stop not working right. Well, what is happening? You're dying by degrees. You talk to people and say, oh, I've had this out, I've had that, a doctor removed this, the doctor removed that. Do you realize when they take something out of your body, they throw it in a bucket and feed it to the dogs or whatever they do with it? But I think you'll admit to me, whatever they took out of you is dead. So that means a part of you died. Now, how much of you has to die before you come to the realization that one of these days they're going to take something out you can't live without? See, what's happening is people die by degrees. And what's the culprit in all this thing? Iniquity. It isn't the drugs. It isn't the alcohol. It isn't the food. Those are the manifestations. The beginning of the whole problem of mankind is iniquity. Now, here's what iniquity is, and then I'll quit. You'll recognize it because you're guilty of it. And the reason I know you're guilty of it is the Lord gave me this message, brought me here with this message, and then called you here to hear it. So it's got to be you. Iniquity. He says, the love of many shall wax cold. Your children don't like you. Your children try to get around you. Your children lie to you. Your children agree and then don't do it. Your children test you at every step of the way. Anything they can get away with, they're always trying to get around you. Their love has waxed cold. Why? Because in this family, iniquity abounds. Iniquity has basically two definitions, and you're going to see how close, but yet how far apart they are. The first part of the definition, from the Greek now, means violation of the law. Now, this is the iniquity. Think of yourself now as the husband, as the spiritual head, or as the wife when your husband's gone, or as the wife if you think you're the spiritual head. Anybody breaks the rules or the law, you know it. I thought you said you were going to do that. That's breaking the rules. See, they're very quick to point out. See, they know violation of the law. Iniquity also means illegality, to be illegal. It means transgression of the law, unrighteousness. Break the law, bend the law. That's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. That's part of iniquity, to violate the law. But you see, the individual that says, that's wrong, they have all kinds of rules. My dinner should be ready at a certain time. I want it prepared this way. I want you to smile when you do it. I want this, I want this, I want that, I want this. And all these rules. And you break one of them, and you'll hear about it. Now this same individual flips over to the other side of iniquity, because the second half of the definition means not subject to the law. Without law, unlawful and wicked. Now, ask yourself this honest question. Iniquity means these two things. It means to point out that somebody's wrong, and to point out to somebody else that the law doesn't apply to them. We love you. That's okay. We understand. Now, be honest now. That's what iniquity is. You say, what you did is wrong, and what that person did is okay because they're not subject to the law. Now, think of this. You as a human being, be honest. You're going to do both. You're going to point out to someone that's wrong, and you're going to point out to someone else, you're not subject to the law, I understand. Now, who are you going to point out their faults? Somebody else. Now, when it comes not subject to the law, that's you. That's iniquity. That's iniquity. When you say the law doesn't apply, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, I didn't mean it that way, you took it wrong, it's your fault, you asked for it. In other words, I'm not subject to the law, but when they do something, man, you got it right down the line. That's iniquity. Now let me tell you how to flip that around, men, and your wife will love you. She won't, as a matter of fact, when you walk out the door, she'll cry until you come back inside. I mean, she will miss you that much. She'll miss you that much. What if we did? And now you know how to point out the fault in everybody else and put the gravy on your back. You know how to baste your back, don't you? You got a ladle all the time, boy. You're souping your back in your gravy all the time, boy. You say, hey, that's all right. I'm cool. I couldn't help it. Yes, I love me. And you know how to do that. Don't tell me you don't know how to do that. And don't tell me you don't know how to do this either, because you know you do. Now, what would happen, do you suppose, seeing that you know how to do both these things so very well, what would happen if we changed that and we said, Reuben, you're wrong. Can't break those rules. You've got to be kind to these people. You can't think wrong of people. You've got to be willing to help all the time. You've got to be able to willing and able to give all the time and always be ready. Reuben, you're wrong if you don't do it. And then when you mess up, say, that's okay. I'll still help. I'll be ready when you're ready. That's turning it just around, isn't it? And that's where the blessings are. That's when my life changed. And it isn't that I learned any new principles. I was very good at pointing at one and excusing the other. All I did is I changed it. And I point at me and excuse you. Now, if you'll learn that principle, that's what love is all about. Jesus took our sin and excused us. We had it coming. He didn't. But see, we do it just the opposite. We make you pay, and we excuse ourselves. Just the opposite of Jesus Christ. And then finally, it says you violate the law. See, everybody knows what the law is. Law means the rules of conduct established and enforced by the authority of a group. See, we don't even have to talk this law. See, the rules of conduct are established by whoever's in charge of the house. So when you say it's all right to scream, when you scream at your wife, when you scream at your kids, when you get angry, temperamental, when you drink, when you get drunk, when you get drunk on temper, on alcohol, drugs, whatever you do, you are establishing rules of conduct. Now, when your family starts living by the same rules that you established and you come down on them, you're guilty of iniquity. The love is going to wax cold, and that family is as good as dead. It's only a question of time. That's all it is. Because, see, God said, look, I'm not even going to hold you to the rules I made. If you don't want to go by my rules, then I'll judge you by yours. And according to you, drinking and cussing and fussing and rambling and scrambling is okay. That's okay. According to your rules, you do it all the time. But sooner or later, your wife's going to catch the drift. And she's going to start too. And that's when you try to put your foot down. Sooner or later, she'll go out to the bars too without you. Sooner or later, she'll do what you're doing. And then that's when you're going to put your foot down. Too late then, friend. You established the rules of conduct being the authority in the group. Now, it's whatever rules. You don't go along with them. And you see how love is killed? By saying this is okay for me to do, and then criticizing other people for following you to the T. You become lawless. Leave you with one thing left, the meaning of iniquity. It means wicked. And do you know where the word wicked comes from? Witchy. Which is where we get our English word, witch. So if you are wicked, if you're iniquity, if you do this, if you act one way and criticize others for acting the same way, you're a witch. And let me tell you what a witch is. It means an ugly, ill-tempered woman, a hag, and a crone. Witch means a woman with supernatural powers by a compact with evil spirits, temperament, anger, whatever. But there's a male side of that. It's called warlock, which means an ugly, ill-tempered man who has powers given to them by evil spirits.
And listen, I can always spot a warlock a mile away, because he rules his family by a compact with evil spirits. Anger is an evil spirit. Now, when you get upset and start screaming and hollering, you are running your family with the help of an evil spirit. That makes you a warlock. That makes you a witch. That makes you wicked. That gives you iniquity. And let me tell you something. The love of many is going to wax cold in that family, beginning with you. And that's the irony of it all. See, your wife doesn't start, her love for you doesn't start waxing cold first. Your love for you starts waxing cold. And here's the tragedy of this whole thing. You stop disrespecting yourself. You start drinking, smoking, doing things to hurt yourself. You start disrespecting yourself. You start not loving yourself. Now this poor woman who you are criticizing is following you, and she says, I have to stop loving you too. I have to stop. She doesn't realize that on a conscious level, but I've never seen it any different. Every man I've ever counseled with, I said, until you respect yourself, until you love yourself, until you start taking care of your body, until you start listening to what you say, and if you say you're going to be there at a certain time, then be there at a certain time. If you say you're going to do something, then do it. Honor yourself. Have some respect for yourself. Honor your word. Think of yourself with esteem. Your word is important. What you do, what you think, what you say is important. Love yourself, in other words. And I've never seen a woman yet and children that didn't love the father the same way that he loved himself. I've never seen a child or a wife that didn't respect her husband or the father the same way he respected himself. Here's the tragedy. He hates himself. He abuses himself. He criticizes himself. He acts like a total jerk toward himself. And then when the wife does the same thing, because she has to, and the children do the same thing because they have to, he gets angry at them. And look at the conflict. They want your approval, men. All they want is your approval. And why is it wrong for them to do to you what you do to you? They can't do any different. So now not only are they not having your love, they don't have your respect, they don't even have your approval. And in the reality, they're following you right to a T. I mean, I know women say, I'm not following my husband. Yes, you are. You just don't know you are. Because that's how he feels about himself. He says, I'm going to quit this, I'm going to do that. And then he doesn't. So you see, he doesn't follow what he says. He's not true to his word. His word about him means nothing to him. He'll make a promise to himself. New Year's resolution breaks him by December the 10th. And even wait till New Year's to break him. He's got them all broken in November, some of them. Well, what is happening? What you're doing is you are demanding then, and then the wife doesn't understand. All of a sudden, this man that she loves so much, this relationship that she wanted so dearly, even against her will, it's waxing cold, and she doesn't understand. What's wrong? It's not right. All you're doing, lady, even though you don't know it, you are following his lead. You are following him whether you like it or not. You may not know it, but you know it tonight. So you see, everything in your life revolves around what kind of man do you have in your family. He makes or breaks the whole thing. He has the ultimate responsibility. That's why God holds him responsible. It's not that he's better than you are. He just has the responsibility. His job is to take care of you and treat you like royalty. But the problem is, he needs a mommy. Now what he wants you to do is diaper him, and now you're in deep trouble, because where are you going to turn? Well, the problem is, now that iniquity abounds and love waxes cold. Now, men, here's what happens. You already have a low self-image about yourself. You're already feeling inferior. Now, the minute your wife starts following your lead and treating you the same way, even though she doesn't want to, and your kids do the same thing, what have you done? You've compounded your problem. Now you think that it's really true, because now your children and your wife are treating you the same way. Now, guys, you know that. And what made the difference? God had to put a man in your life that said, I love you no matter what you do. I'll be with you no matter what you do. I'll help you. All you got to do is ask me. And someone that sometime, once in a while, you slapped him in the face here and there, turned your back, but he was always ready when you were there. Now, I'm not saying that. I'm not basting myself now. Don't misunderstand. If it were up to me, I wouldn't give you the time of day, friend. If it were up to me, I'd have picked your pocket a long time ago and head for the hills. I never did like you, to tell you the truth. But Jesus Christ loves you. It gives me a desire in my heart to see you prosper. Why, I don't understand, but it's there. And I thank God for it. But you see, that's all you needed, is for someone to change this trend and someone to say, this is the way that it's done. I will point at me and I'll forgive you. And all of a sudden, your whole perspective on life changes. And then what happens? Little by little, your circumstances start to change and things start getting better. And I'm asking you, now that that's happening, don't quit. Don't stop. We've just begun. It's going to get a whole lot better. Or a whole lot worse. Depends on you. But you see, that's all it takes to succeed in life. Love. The right kind of love. If you have iniquity, there's no love. It's just that simple. Now, Sunday, when you come back, I'm going to show you how to apply this to your life. How to succeed in everything that you do. See, what good is it to be a Christian? What good is it to come to church if the only thing that happens, somebody puts a basket around, you drop a few bucks, and then you leave just as stupid as you came in, and a few bucks lighter in the wallet? What good does that do you? It doesn't do anybody any good. And what good does it do if the pastor comes in and tells you how wonderful Jesus is? We already know that. You're the one that we need to talk about. You're the one that has the problem. Jesus is very happy in heaven. I'll guarantee you he's got no problems. So you see, what we got to talk about is the people that are hoiting. And that happens to be you and I. See, this is very simple. And if you'll take it with love, I don't say these things to make you feel bad. I don't say these things to put you down. I say these things to show you that you're already down. I'm trying to help you up, friend. I'm not trying to put you down. I don't want to be your mother. I want to be a man in your life. And to a woman, I want to be a man. And to a man, I want to be a model of how you can be a man. See, this life is just great if you do it the Lord's way. Other than that, love will wax cold. Jobs, careers, everything you've chased, eventually you won't like it, you won't want it, and you won't understand why. So as a result, you'll always be chasing and never attaining, never receiving satisfaction from that that you worked so hard for. Never being happy. Never knowing what's it all about. That's horrible to be that way. Brother Sherman, would you close the service in prayer? Man, I quit early tonight.